Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Getting It Done, and I'm your host, Dr. Walter Dean. How about that? It's been a while since I've had more than one show on a week, but this, I thought it was important for us to pay attention to the death of Jesus Christ. I mentioned that on the show yesterday, I think, and it would be nice to have a show about Jesus. So today we were listening to a TV show that was produced by Donahue, who has on his show Blair Underwood, the movie star Blair Underwood, that you probably heard of, and they will be discussing the Black Christ. Now, here we are, getting ready to witness the rebirth or the coming from the grave of Jesus Christ. And in most churches that you go to, Jesus Christ is not black. But we're going to find out from this discussion today really what he was.
What color?
Black.
Black?
Yes.
What color was he? Jesus was a human. If you're a Christian, you believe that he was the second son of the Blessed Trinity. He was the Son of God. He was divine, but he was expressed as, in his 33 years on earth, as a human being. And now coming forward are not a few very, very active people to say that the presentation of a white Jesus down through history before people of color has served to characterize the Caucasian as superior,
right,
as the best,
right,
as better than others.
Right.
And more than that, has perpetuated a lie of the people of color and continued their enslavement.
That's right.
Here's who's here. Blair Underwood joins us.
L.A. Law.
Blair needs no lecture on this. A lot of black folks don't go for this black Jesus at all. Been praying to a white Jesus all their lives. This is their Jesus. And no activist of the moment is going to come along and rip that imagery out of their soul. And they're just as proud of their blackness as anybody else. It doesn't have to do with all this psychological stuff that you newfangled people keep bringing up. Blair Underwood has produced a, it's misleading to call it a movie. It's a 30-minute short film. Yeah, 30-minute film in which he plays Jesus, titled The Second Coming, which was written, produced, and as you see, starred in by Blair Underwood. You should also know, without giving the story of this film away, that the historical Jesus then appears in your film as a contemporary black male,
right,
who is in a mental institution and they're scared to death of this guy. And, I mean, almost to the point where, you know, they're just beating him down. Did the Rodney King thing inspire you? Oh, most definitely. I've been very outspoken about things that I have dealt with the Los Angeles Police Department. Friends of mine, young African-American males with the so-called justice system. And when the Rodney King, the first verdict, came out a year ago, it hit me. I said, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a so-called celebrity. It doesn't matter if you're Rodney King. Even Christ, if he were a man of color, were to come back, he would be treated the same way. So in the film, that's why he's accused of this heinous crime, without giving too much of it away. But I need to make the point before we get into this, because we're going to get very heated, as it has before.
Well,
I don't know. We got a pretty thoughtful audience here. Now, they will offer their own insightful, civilly structured commentary here in just a moment.
But it's important for people to realize that this film is not about dividing people. You see, this audience has seen the film. It's about understanding. It's about enlightenment. It's about, well, this man, Jesus, whatever he looked like,
yeah,
what he taught, his philosophy,
yeah,
of love. But we're dealing with this historical figure.
Yes, we are. What color was he, Blair? In your own, are you a Christian?
Yes, I am.
You were raised a Christian.
Yes.
And, you know, this is not an investigation, but, I mean, was it, you better get to church or mama's going to have to know why? I don't know.
It was pretty much like that, yeah.
All right, so that you, was it Baptist?
Baptist.
All right, so you sang all those hymns to Jesus, and I'm sure that Jesus, throughout your childhood, was white. Is that so?
That's correct, but we were always told that he was a man of color. Before we get into it, you have to understand, what is black? What is blackness? Blackness is one of three things. It's either a perception, what you see. When you look at me, so you see a man of a darker hue. It's either a state of mind, a consciousness. That's why I have friends of mine who are white, and you'll say, and they know more about African-American heritage and culture than some black people. And you'll say, well, this white guy, he's black. He's a brother. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, when we talk about blackness, it's defined by your ancestral lineage, your genealogical line. If you go to the genealogical line of Jesus, there are people of color throughout his lineage completely. And the thing is, before anybody can take issue with this film or with this entire issue, and it's not a novel idea, the significance of this film is it's never been on camera. A black Jesus has never been on camera,
right.
Certainly not a crucifixion. So it's been there. And it's important to establish that, because all the things you said, we talked about
right.
The justice system.
Well,
but once we get beyond that, then and only then, it becomes relevant.
Yeah. I want to make sure I understand your position here, Blair. You do seem to be finessing a bit. That color is a matter of the heart. And you're right. There are white people who have been so very, very exemplary in their continued effort to ensure that the civil rights of all people are protected.
Mm-hmm.
That people of color, minorities, have started to refer to them as brother or sister.
Right.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still white. I think you are suggesting that there's some pretty good historical and anthropological evidence suggesting that Jesus just probably was black. Am I correctly stating your...
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
In that,
was he a Jewish black guy?
There's no question. We're talking about a Jewish man from Jerusalem who more than likely, there were no camcorders or polaroid cameras then, but more than likely had to have been a man of color. We're talking about probabilities.
Are you there, caller?
Yes, Phil. I just want to say that when God said he was going to make man in his image, he did not mean white, green, or any color. It was supposed to be spiritually like him.
Very good.
And that's what is important.
Yes, Phil. Well, I tell you, caller, I very much appreciate your thoughtful comment, except you are kissing a baby here. And you're waving a flag. These politically active people who want to, as you'll see in a moment, there are people who are taking down the white Jesus because that is, he has been presented for 2,000 years before peoples of all color as a Caucasian,
right,
European.
I got through.
Europe. Oh, you got two lines coming in on one. That's a pretty good sign, Blair. You kind of rung the bell here. So please don't miss the point. It's not enough to say, hey, we're all God's children. If you continue to present Jesus this way before little African-American children or people of color all over the world, they grow up somehow believing that way down inside, white is better.
Plus the fact that we're talking about the historical figure. We are created in God's image, but this man, Jesus, the actual human being we're speaking of.
Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
You wanted to say.
Yeah, I wanted to say, I'm a 32-year-old white female who was raised Catholic, and I just have to say that no matter if Jesus is black, white, green, red, I believe in the supreme being, and I think that's what we all have to look at.
I asked a Catholic this question.
Yeah.
Would it be okay with, I assume you're a churchgoer?
Well, no, not as much as I was.
Well, but you've been, all right, well, it's not, this. Would you approve of your pastor changing the color of Jesus' statues to black in your church?
If that was what my church did, I don't look at a picture of Jesus and say, oh, that's Jesus. I have a feeling within me
right. That
there's a supreme being,
but what color has Jesus been throughout your childhood?
White. And
what
I
color,
think that's ridiculous. Because,
what color was his mother?
You know, who knows? And I don't think anyone... those people that are on your show
I must tell you this. I'm older than you are, but there were no black statues in my childhood.
Well, right.
I mean everybody. St. Teresa, Joseph, everybody.
Everybody, I had a guardian angel was white.
Right, they were all white. And I'm just saying, but just because that's how we were raised
doesn't mean
that we have to be so narrow-minded and so focused.
Blair agrees, I'm sure.
We
yeah.
can't open up our minds and our hearts to something different.
She's missing the point. It is twofold. You have to answer this question twofold. It's important because when you speak of this man, when all the evidence points to that, it's an affirmation of people of color. I'm speaking of Latino, Asian, African Americans, Native Americans, people of color. It's an affirmation of our place in history that we contributed.
Right.
I'm telling you, people wonder why there are riots and why there are blacks and Latinos in jail so much. There's no self-image.
Right.
When you deal with revisionist history, there's been revised and altered as it has. It deals with your self-image. You don't care about life anymore.
The Reverend George Stallings, now referred to as bishop, former Catholic priest, since has split himself from mainstream Catholicism, has his own church, Washington, D.C. He preaches a sermon. Here he is, Good Friday of this year, the Reverend Stallings from Washington.
We must make one thing clear on this Good Friday, that the Jesus of history that you saw walking up the street just a few minutes ago is only an imposter. The white Christ is only a figment of Michelangelo's imagination. The white Christ is an imposter of white Christianity.
Now, what I'm saying is we're starting to divide. It's not about dividing people. It's about speaking about the truth. And then, that's the second part of the question, you have to deal with this man. This man was about love. This man was about embracing everybody. This man was about forgiveness. This man was about enlightenment. This man was about tolerance. And that's what this film that we did, The Second Coming, is about, tolerance for each other and tolerance for each other's religious beliefs. I have to say, I have to make this point, with all respect to Archbishop Stallings, I don't agree with tearing down other images. You can't force people to believe like you believe. I believe in speaking about the truth.
Speaking of tearing down, here is the Reverend Stallings. I'll tell you what, whether you're on Saturday Night Live or standing in this public square in Washington, D.C., seems everybody's putting the match to something today. So this is not going to be met with the approval of everybody. Some people communicate differently than others, and that's, if I'm understanding Mr. Underwood, you are, among other things, saying that you believe it can be established very credibly that Jesus was a man of color. And that, if I'm understanding you, you have a certain empathy for those, especially those older Christians of all colors who have spent a lifetime worshiping a white Jesus. You're not going to go in there and break anybody's statue, but you are stepping forward to say, I'm stepping forward 2,000 years later. You have to understand the initial images of Christ and the Madonna
right.
in countries like Poland, Spain, Italy, these are white Caucasian countries,
right.
worship.
A black
Madonna,
Madonna
and a black
Jesus.
These images were altered and changed. Are you there, caller? Hi.
Hi, Donahue.
Hi.
I'm calling from Pennsylvania, and I'm a white female, and I don't see where there's any difference in whether or not Jesus is black, just like the first caller. First, I'd like to commend Blair Underwood for the relevance of what this is bringing out to the surface. In these day and ages, people need to get beyond the color factor.
Yes.
Who we pray to does not matter. We were created in his image. If I go to heaven, I might see him as white. If someone else goes to heaven, they might see him as black. Who do we know what we're going to perceive him as?
Well, except that we are left
to at least leave the door open for at least an inquiry, as Mr. Underwood has already offered us with his film titled The Second Coming.
I agree.
If we accept the humanity of Jesus, that Jesus was a human being who happened to be divine, and that is traditional Christian doctrine, then we have to deal with his ethnicity, and that's what Blair is doing. I'm glad you called, Pennsylvania. Are you there? You had a brief comment. Go ahead.
Yes. I would like to say that, number one, yes, Jesus Christ was a black man. Jesus Christ was from the Mediterranean region. And if you were to read in your Bible, it will tell you that he had matted hair and red feet. White people always said that Christ, black people had red feet. But that's not the issue here. The issue is, look to the true fact.
Right.
Over in the Mediterranean, people were of dark skin.
You notice Revelations?
Cool.
You're familiar with 1:15. Yeah. You know what you want to talk about? Here we go. As you know, the Bible is, of course, I'm a brilliant biblical scholar. But here's from Revelation. His head and his hairs were white, like wool, as white as snow. And his eyes were as a flame of fire. And his feet like unto fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace. So it's the brass metaphor that you think lends support to his being.
That is what you usually get, the brass metaphor and also about the hair. But more specifically, like I said before, because that can be talked away and rationalized away into symbolism.
Yes, it can.
I'm talking about the ancestral lineage of this man. And in fact, scientists have told us we all come, and the first man and women were black, so really we all have
yes.
Blackness.
And are you there, caller? I'm glad you waited.
Hi, Blair.
Hi.
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
I am a white Christian woman, and I believe, I agree with Blair that...
You're 5 for 5. Yeah.
Right. I agree. I believe just because of geographically where Jesus was born, that he was of color. I don't know particularly what shade, but I know he was of color. And I also think that, you know, when it comes down to it, everyone who's a Christian believes in Jesus' blood, and that's what matters, the color of his blood.
I do thank you for your call. I assume Blair is encouraged by the support you're receiving. You come out here waiting to hear some self-righteous white Christian stand up and say, who do you think you are messing with my Jesus?
Well, that is part of it. We have gotten that, and we'll get more of that. But these are people who have missed the point.
The spiritual significance of Jesus Christ is that African-Americans have suffered from institutional racism, which diminishes their spiritual and cultural self-esteem because of the color of Christ. And that should not go unnoticed. Commend you, brother. Bless
these
you.
These young people have been asked to be with us. Some not so young people. This might be older than the host here. Well, then I should be deferential to you and to your age, sir, and I will. These are people who are church active, and I think most are Christians. And want you to know that I think you all are very supportive of Blair's effort to share with the nation and the world the idea that Jesus was a man of color. Kane Hope Felder, Ph.D., joins us. You're a professor at Howard University School of Divinity, and you wanted to say what about this issue?
I want to say, first of all, it's important to recognize that the Bible is represents a world before color prejudice. The Bible represents a world that has a very favorable attitude towards blacks. It's a multicultural world.
Yes, it is.
One of the great tragedies has been that in the last 400 years, Europeans and white Americans have created the whole ideology of white supremacy, and they have, in the process, taken the images, sacred images, as well as secular images of that are victorious and positive, and made those images white.
Right.
And by the same token, they have recast black into a negative image. I think that is a very important thing to keep in mind here. We are interested in corrective historiography, setting the record straight, so that our people, African-American people, who begin to sense, I think was pointed out in a very wonderful way earlier, have much in history that has been neglected.
It is not a reach to suggest that the slave who worshipped on Sunday, the Messiah who was Jesus, who was white in all his temporal manifestations as offered to us by Michelangelo and other of the classical artists over the centuries.
Yes.
Would be likely to bring the same kind of obsequious deference to the slave master who was white as well. So I think you are here to say, among other things, that inside, there's nothing overt about this, and it's insidious, but it's there, is the notion that somehow white people are to be obeyed, respected, and looked up to by the slave.
Particularly when the white slave master has a whip and a gun to the slave's head. Particularly when this image is presented in such a way that the black has no option. The black cannot believe anything else. It cannot even express anything but the quiet inner pain of seeing the inconsistency between the whole teachings about a God of love and somehow the Bible is being used to keep them oppressed and feeling negative about themselves. And that is a tradition that we have received in America, and the average white person needs to be instructed on these matters, not just young black kids. The average white person in America is as misinformed and miseducated as the average black person. And I think that this is a very substantial issue in all of the colleges and universities in this country.
Muhammad Ali called our attention a long time ago to the color of devil's food cake and angel food cake. Are you there, caller? I'm glad you waited. Hi. Is the caller there? Probably a good idea if I push the button.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, I'm sorry. You wanted to say.
Yes. If Jesus is supposed to be black all of a sudden, why wasn't he portrayed as black 2,000 years ago? Why did they start him out as white and all of a sudden he's black?
You got a lot of white reporters intervening.
Yeah.
I mean, it was I think these folks are suggesting that the image of Jesus was co-opted by the white establishment over the years. All the artists were white.
They were all liars then.
Liars, I mean.
Right, then they all lies.
I want to say this to the caller. Over 100 references to Egypt are in the Bible. Over 50 references to biblical Ethiopia, which is present-day Sudan, are in the Bible. Old Testament and New Testament. Bible scholars, most of them have been white, have translated and interpreted the Bible in a way that would be distinctly favorable to Europe and a way that would be distinctly unfavorable to Africans and people of color.
Yeah.
And this is an issue that we really have been suffering under for a long time.
And we'll be back. I got a break call. I'm truly sorry. Give us a one-liner. I got to get out of here.
In that case, we can't believe the Bible either.
She's right.
Well, now, just be careful here. Thanks for waiting, caller. You wanted to say briefly.
Yes, so I'm a black female and I'm married to a white male, and my in-laws are so prejudiced against me. Now, I just wonder, what's going to happen to all these people that are so prejudiced and so hateful towards black folks when they do see a black Jesus, if it is a black Jesus, and what's going to happen to the most of the media that has just been terrible to black media? What are they going to say then?
There's not going to be one decision about what color Jesus may be in your church. This would obviously be something that the church itself, incidentally, many churches have already made this step forward.
Right.
Not a few are predominantly black churches in urban areas. Hang on a minute, caller, because next to Dr. Felder is Corrine Stewart. You're a real live 15-year-old teenager. Well, we should know how you feel. Mr. Stewart, sir, what are your thoughts about this issue?
Well, I just think that throughout history, our history has been denied. If you look at, we don't have to just look at Jesus. We could go back to Cleopatra when they was playing Cleopatra. We didn't see that on television. We saw a white woman as Cleopatra. We saw Moses on television portrayed as a white man. But this is not something new. This is not something that just jumped out the cracks all of a sudden. We have been discussing this for a while.
What inspires you, Corrine? You're very, obviously, you've done your own scholarship on this. At age 15, you were raised in a Christian church, huh?
Yes.
Did you sing in the choir? I mean, were you there every Sunday? Not all
lie to us. I sang in the choir. My mother had me to come.
I bet she did. Well, are you still singing in the choir, Corrine? This is none of our business. You want to take the fifth? Go.
I can't. I tell you, I don't sing in the choir because I can't sing.
Another stereotype.
Yes, it is. Very good point. And you're probably not too good with the three-point basketball shot either. So let's put down a lot of these stereotypes while we're at it. You were inspired to look into this how, Corrine?
Well, like most children and stuff. I really didn't pay any attention to it. When we walked through the church, Jesus was white, Mary was white, and every picture on the wall was white. But then one day I just took a step back and looked and thought about, why is this? Why do we have these images? Where are we? We're not just slaves. We are more than ex-slaves. We're from Africa. We have a very rich heritage. We were the first architects. We built pyramids. We were the first astrologists. So I just took a step back and said, hey, we're not this. We're more than gang members. We're more than killers, basketball players, musicians. And I think it's the time. It's the time. It was time 25 years ago when Martin Luther King was assassinated, when Malcolm X was assassinated. I want somebody else to step up to the front plate. It's not, we just shouldn't sit here and just say, oh, well, heck, they let us go to a bathroom.
Caller, you had a brief comment.
Yes, I'm an African-American female who's about to become a mother. And my comment is in reference to the depiction of biblical characters throughout the year. If it wasn't such a big issue, then they would also involve people of color throughout the year.
Right.
I mean, what am I supposed to tell my child when it's born when it says, Mommy, why isn't there people my color up there?
Yes. You're thinking, Mom. Your wheels are turning.
Because I grew up in a household where there was a white Jesus or Caucasian person depicted.
Yes. Yeah.
And you never saw anyone of color. It's
right.
Like we didn't exist.
Hang on a minute. Jesus' role was a man of love. What I'm seeing and hearing is that Messiah religious. In other words, Jesus is what color? Jesus' role was a man who taught love.
What color?
Color has nothing to do with it.
Right.
Oh.
In reality, Jesus was bronze.
What do you got?
Okay? But what I'm seeing and hearing is nothing but sacrilegious. Destroying of the picture.
You're
horrible.
You're not hearing this.
If you look in the Bible, it tells you that the first man, Adam, was formed from the dust. Dust is not white. And the Bible says that Jesus is the second man, Adam.
All right.
So
now we're going to have a lot of biblical stuff from you because I want you to know something. I don't want to get any arguments with you. You wanted to say briefly what?
I want to ask a question, and that is why it is everybody's up in arms about the truth. The truth of the matter that Jesus was not a European Caucasian person. He was a person of color. Now, the white people have determined what color is. If you're not white, then you're black. So that means that Jesus Christ was, of course, Dr. Fellows, the leading scholar in this field.
Wendy Reitmeier is here. You get to talk today, Wendy. You say, among other things, that it shouldn't matter. That's the first thing I think you want to know. What else would you like to share with this audience? May we assume you are a good Christian person?
Yes. Yeah.
Doesn't have your age here, so I don't know if I'm up to you. 28.
Uh-huh.
Kindly tell us what you think.
I really don't think it should matter. I think that if you really believe that it changes how you feel about him, then maybe you should reevaluate your relationship with him. You know, it doesn't matter if he's black or white, because it's stated again and again and again in the Bible that he walked through all the nations. It didn't matter who they were. He loved him regardless.
Would it upset you if he's portrayed as black?
No.
Wouldn't?
No.
So if that would be the choice of certain congregations and within the Christian tradition, that's okay with you?
Sure.
Well, guess who else is here? My good man, you get the award for humility. You've said nothing here. You've been very, very, we can only assume that you're ready to say something. You are the Reverend Dr. F. Brennan Jackson. You are pastor of the Calvary Institutional Missionary Baptist Church in Gary, Indiana. Proud tradition. Here's a church that wasn't formed yesterday. You've been around a while. You then have, I assume, worshiping in your church, people of all ages, but you also have, I would think, a considerable number of seniors who worship in your church who happen to be African-American. How am I doing?
Right.
So you have to be sensitive to their feelings.
Right.
And you can't come up in the 11th hour of their life and start tearing down pictures. Do I understand some of the challenges you face with this, or would you want to? Or tell us how you feel.
I don't face the challenge, or we don't face the challenge. I've never been under the assumption that God is a man as such. We teach God as a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth.
And the God of all mankind. I'm thinking you teach.
Right.
And I bet he's white on the statues of your church.
No.
I bet he's white in the pictures.
No. The picture in the pool depicts him as black. But everybody knows that's not Jesus. That's just a picture.
Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God.
So that there's
one other thing.
Yes.
Jesus said in the book of John, other sheep have I that's not of this fold. If a brother just wants to take the Jesus is of color, it's all right. But I have heard nothing said yesterday about salvation. It's all been about color, and that is sacrilegious.
Well, that is a step. You have any idea? Yeah, I got an hour show, and you come here with 12 books now.
Right. So,
you got to do the work of Caesar here now. Take me around the world.
No.
Here, man.
I can't show you. I want to challenge them, all of them on your show.
What color was Jesus?
Jesus was black and he lived. He didn't exist. Here is the Pope of Rome praying in his private chapel to the Black Madonna.
The Black Madonna.
That's the private chapel in the Vatican for anyone.
Very well woven into the Polish tradition. Yeah. Our Pope is a Pole. Yeah. And we should not be surprised that the Black Madonna has been worshipped by our Pope.
Oh, yeah.
All right? I got to hang on just a minute. Boy, I'll tell you, you make me nervous. Yeah. Now, wait a minute. I don't want you mad at me. Let's take another look at Blair's film here. Now, Jesus, as you saw, it opens with the crucifixion, three crosses, and Blair plays the role of the Christ. And now here he is expressing himself in contemporary times. They got this guy locked up real good, scared to death. I mean, we got chains and doors and locks and a lot of frightened white people locking up this man who... In this, as you would accept it in the manner in which Blair has written this, would be a suggestion of the second coming, and he's got some of the brothers shook. Watch this.
How the hell are you supposed to be boxed?
It was bad.
Come on, brother, come on.
You know Christ but no nickel.
Blackness is far more than perception, Andre. Blackness. But also that which is inherited to a natural lineage. It's irrelevant what my skin color is, light or dark. I'm black. Because black ancestral blood flows through my veins. If the roots of the tree are black, then the fruit must be black. And the black with blonde hair and blue eyes, just as you want to be. You must understand, my friend, that my father created me from all people, for all people. But you see, I am what I am.
All right, Blair. What would you want to add to that thing? I'd like to say it's important to note that in the film, he's not imprisoned only by white people. In the film, it goes both ways. You're good and bad on both sides. And that actor, by the way, is Ben Brown in that scene. Well done. Well done. Thank you, but I think what I was saying before manifests itself in that scene. It's important to say this man was a man of color. It's important. And we're talking about, and I agree with you, sir, God is a spirit. But we're talking about this human being that walked the earth. And for you, sir, here, right here, Christianity, if you want to move that aside, that's fine. This film is from a Christian standpoint. I'm not getting into your beliefs if you don't believe in Christ or gentlemen here.
And well, he had to be.
Let the Reverend make his point, sir.
He had a heavenly mother and a heavenly father.
Yes, sir.
God, the Catholic Church, called in 325, called the First Church Council. And they sit there and debated for 320-some years who Jesus is. And they finally came out saying he is part human and divine. Now, it's not the human expression of Jesus.
It's fully human and fully divine.
Yes.
It's being human, yeah, that
was divine.
Yes.
He was divine who for 33 years expressed himself in human form.
And in human form.
Yeah, you know, you got me to contend with here, too, you know. Yeah, but see, yes.
Was given to us that we would be able to withstand these kind of things. And as far as the church being in trouble over what's being exposed here now. The church has always been in trouble. The church was born in trouble.
Yes.
So this will not make a difference. And if these brothers want to believe, and brothers want to believe, if this will help brothers to believe Jesus is what I'm calling,
that's right,
okay.
I am
with you.
Right. Kareem, you wanted to say, I have to break your
yeah. This is very nice to know. If he says he's a human being, if he's a human being, he has to have a color. Have any of you seen a human being walk around with green, purple, blue, orange,
no.
yellow?
But it
all
says in the Bible that he is all and he is in all, regardless.
With anybody saying that Jesus, the color of Jesus do not matter, especially when you're looking at a people that's been demoralized, degraded by using the Jesus concept as white. And that's something we have to really look at.
I think so, too. Yes, ma'am, you wanted to say.
I just want to take
issue. Take the mic, please.
Yes.
Take issue, please.
I just want to find out, why is it that we have a problem with Jesus being black? Why is there a problem? I mean, why is it okay for him to be white? All these years he has been...
Why isn't it okay for him to be white?
Why?
He is.
Because we have, learned from we were born that the image of this man has been white. Why can't we put a black image in there now?
Did you want to get the mic? You'll stand, please.
No, the only thing that I think that needs to be brought out here is that the issues are being confused. There's a spiritual aspect of Jesus. We all love him. He's in our hearts. He's
right.
in our soul. He lives.
Right.
Okay, but there's a human aspect, and I think that's what has to be addressed. You're mixing the issues, and that's why you said that everything was sacrilegious, this, that, and the other thing. I understand your point, but the issue is human, not spiritual.
It's not religion.
Yeah. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's
just hasn't had a chance. Come on. Here's a young man.
Talk.
Had a black
right. Judas. Yes, we did. Yes, sir. You wanted to say.
Yes, I basically am not concerned about how white folks view Jesus Christ. My concern is about black people.
Yeah.
The reason why I say this is because if you examine all civilizations, they had an image, the gods were in their image,
yeah,
right? We have to understand that we as black people are a dominated people. And as a result of that, our oppressors are going to put their gods and their beliefs on us,
yeah.
right? And as a result of that, That is the reason why you find that our kids, our young children growing up, cannot project themselves or see themselves into anything substantial in life.
Your point is made.
All right.
I thank you. Kareem Stewart, are you Kareem's mother?
Yes.
You are. Well, you raised this young man to do a lot of thinking by the time he was 15 years old. His own presentation here about the importance of the ethnicity of Jesus is very, very compelling and shows a lot of hard work on his part. And you wanted to say?
I just wanted to say, when Kareem and I pray, we don't pray because Jesus is black or white. What Kareem is trying to portray to you is that as a human being, the way he's depicted it has an effect on our black people. As young people, when they look up, they want to see someone that they can say that did something in their life. And Kareem looked, he said, well, Mom, why do we have white Jesus? Was Jesus white? I said, no, he wasn't white. The Bible depicts him as a man of color. I said, but from the European aspect, this is the way they portrayed him, because how would it look for enslaved days to have a white or black Jesus as a savior?
Yeah, yes. Are you there, caller?
It wasn't me.
Yeah. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
You wanted to say?
I wanted to say I don't think it makes any difference, white or black. If Jesus, in effect, was black, well, then should the white children not have somebody to look up to as they're claiming that the black children do? What is the difference?
Gotta ask them to look up for years.
This young woman wanted to say.
I don't know what color Jesus was. But I'm moved by Blair Underwood's film and impressed with it. And Kareem, I hope to raise my child as Kareem's mom has raised Kareem, just to think about how we are in society and what color. I don't know if it matters. I don't know if Jesus was white or black, but it's okay. And
we'll be back in just a moment. Here is a look at the Bible, its scholarship, its history. I tell you, they never call you chicken. Wade into this. Wendy, briefly, you wanted to say.
There's one thing that I don't want to happen from all this, because this issue is going to keep getting hotter and hotter and hotter. I don't want to see young kids fighting because Jesus was black or white.
Yeah,
I want to see them all
go
forward and say he loved us.
Very
all.
Good point.
Black people, we need to stop pointing the finger at white people. We need to look at ourselves and see why we collected. We We let everybody else, Jews, Koreans, come into our community, control our economics of our community.
Right.
And we can't even open the store in our own community.
Are you there, Paul, or you wanted to say briefly?
Yeah, I'm very annoyed over not the point that Jesus would be white or black, but it's just another issue again thrown into the media. I'm the mother of a 4-year-old child, and while shopping one day, he asked, "Mommy, is that man black?" And I said, "Yes, he is." And the man practically attacked me and said, "That's what's wrong with this white world."
No, the gentleman was wrong. You are quite correct in answering truthfully your son's question, and we trust that you put a positive spin as well on the answer. But wouldn't the black Jesus, to be at least occasionally exposed to your young child, help him with his curiosity?
Oh, sure. He's been to a black Santa Claus, and
there
I live in a white area. And
yeah.
I want to point out
a good geography lesson. Dr. Felder commented.
Yeah, a good geography lesson for us all. You take some people, you put send one of them to tell them to walk to Berlin, see how long it takes them. Tell them to, from Jerusalem to Berlin. And then tell them to walk from Jerusalem to Britain. Tell them to walk to Germany. And at the same time, tell another person to walk to Africa. That person walking to Africa from Jerusalem will get there in many, many days ahead of the others. We fail to realize exactly that Palestine is exactly where it's always been, and it's a tragedy that America and our higher education system continuously uses the politics of race to present distorted information, which is worked against black people and for white people. That's what needs to be looked at carefully.
I think Pope Julius II, back in 1509, had the same agenda that perhaps some of the Catholic ministers had when I was growing up. Stony the Road We Trod is another work by Dr. Felder. I'm pleased to call your attention once again to Blair Underwood's work titled The Second Coming. More immediately, you should know that tonight, if you're watching us on Monday, tonight, Blair stars with
Lou Gossett.
They're both in prison, and they look up to discover that Lou's his father, and yes, Blair's his son. This is tonight on NBC, and we will be watching it. Yes.
I'm really sad that this is an issue now because I have two grandchildren.
And you think there's enough division for you?
No, I mean, it's what's in your heart.
You know? Yes.
This issue is complex enough.
Right.
And if God is the end all and be all of salvation,
yes.
What difference is his color?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard a most provocative discussion about the color of Jesus Christ, the Christ child. I guess there were so many different elements to that, it would probably be very difficult to actually distinguish what way you feel it might be appropriate to go. But there are things that were said that were true on both sides. However, if we were to take a strong look at history and the biblical stories about the coming of Jesus Christ, what he would look like, then you would have to go along, if you do believe in Christianity and you do believe in the Bible, even in the St. James Version, they depict Jesus Christ as being a person of color. So now, that's the way this particular show has gone so far, but I wanted to move on to another level. And we're going to listen to these two young ladies talk and discuss something from UNC-TV. And I don't know if we'll be able to get through the whole thing, but just listen and see.
Belongs to She Who Holds the Pen. That's been my mantra for a national narrative that tends to swallow black women. But Alula Bumble, the great-great-granddaughter of the same Madam T.J. Walker, has been holding up the pen and telling her story in a persistent, tenacious, and inimitable way. Bumble, a graduate of Harvard College and the Columbia School of Journalism, has been an ABC News producer and executive, and she's also a celebrated author, especially of the award-winning book On Her Own Ground, The Life and Times of Madam T.J. Walker. She's currently working on a biography of her great-grandmother, Eleanor Walker, a woman who had an important impact on the arts and culture during the Harlem Renaissance. Eleanor, welcome. Thanks for being with me. I know I'm glad to be here. Well, I'm just so excited. There seems to be a Walker Renaissance. There is the products that years ago established that fortune are now being sold again. The home, Eleanor Walker's home, has now been repurchased. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, you know, this is the 100th anniversary of Madam Walker's death. She died in May of 1919. So there are so many things that are coming together. Yes, the products are available. Madam C.J. Walker Beauty Culture, produced by Sundial Brands, which was founded by Richard Lee Dennis, are sold exclusively in Sephora. Madam Walker's home is now part of the New Voices Fund, Richelieu's foundation that is helping women of color entrepreneurs. My book, On Her Own Ground, is in production as a Netflix series. So
I love it.
Octavia Spencer for early 2020, and I'm in the process of finishing my Eleanor Walker biography. So, yeah, there are lots of amazing things happening. I sort of feel like this 100th anniversary, Madam is kind of, you know, coming out again and really staking her claim.
And her story is such a classic inspiration for Black women and for women, first woman millionaire, I mean, self-made millionaire, not inherited. And that's an important distinction in these United States. The head of an empire that at one time had thousands of either employees or agents who were selling her products, which then made it possible for Black women to escape maid's work, which is what many of us did at that time, to escape the drudgery of the cotton field, but instead to really build our own businesses and entrepreneurship. That's an amazing story.
But, you know, when you think that she started life on the same plantation where her parents had been enslaved and then was a washerwoman until she was 38, but when her hair began to fall out, she was able to develop a shampoo and an ointment that healed her scalp infections, and then she began to sell it, and then she began to train other women. So, yes, ultimately, thousands of women were Walker agents. And what I love about her story is that, yes, she became a millionaire, but she used that wealth and influence to make a difference in her community as a philanthropist and a patron of the arts, a political activist. And I think in some ways the hair care products, while they were very important in giving women something, Black women's products that were specifically for them, I think the hair care products, in a way, became a means to an end.
Yeah.
That she was empowering other women, helping them become economically independent.
And in addition, she really did, she was such a feminist, and she had to deal with the sexism that so many of our brothers imposed. One of my favorite stories about her is where she, Booker T. Washington would not give her a platform at one of the National Business League conferences, even though she was wildly successful. And she, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but she took the microphone and said, "You don't have to promote me, I promote myself."
Exactly.
And that's just a great story.
Yeah, you know, it is the concept that women have to interrupt. You know, and she gained his respect over a period of time, but yet she did have to sort of assert herself. And she wasn't part of his inner circle. And she really had a concept of women being their own best advocates. When she had her first convention of her sales agents in 1917, she said to the women, "Your first duty is to humanity. I want others to look at us as Walker agents and realize that we care not just about ourselves, but about others." And the women at the end of the conference sent a telegram to President Woodrow Wilson urging him to make lynching a federal crime. So she was, yes, she was a feminist, she was an activist, she was an advocate for Black people.
And she was a race woman.
And she was a race woman.
Well, much has been written and talked about Madam Walker, so we really want to talk about Eleanor, but before we do, let's debunk the myth that Madam invented the straight before.
Oh, God. You know, this is a bit like my quest. For more than four decades, I've done research. And, you know, I mean, I grew up hearing people say that. So it really is very much a part of sort of the zeitgeist among African Americans that Madam Walker invented the hot comb. But she did not invent the hot comb. It was being used in the 1870s in France, these heated metal implements. People know about the Marcel way. Mr. Marcel was doing his thing when she was still a child on the plantation. So those things had been around for a long time. She did use the hot comb. She popularized the hot comb, but she did not invent the hot comb. And so I think the key thing for people to know is that at a time when most Americans didn't have indoor plumbing, people didn't bathe very often, they didn't wash their hair very often, therefore they had really horrible scalp disease. And her real contribution was developing a shampoo and an ointment with sulfur that healed scalp infections and gave people healthy hair. So her first issue was, I'm going bald, I need to grow hair. Okay, not I need to straighten it. Exactly. Alunia Walker, such a fascinating woman. We don't know as much about her, certainly, well, I don't know as much about her as I'd like to, which is why I'm waiting on this book.
Yes, yes, yes.
But what we do know about her is that she was a great patroness of the arts, that she also maintained activity in the civil rights movement, but she was like a phenomenal entertainer.
Exactly.
Tell me more about her.
Because, you know, as I have done the research on both of these women, what you were saying in the opening is that our stories are lost, our stories are erased, and our stories are misconstrued. Because we, in many cases, don't have the documentation to tell our stories, or people intentionally diminish who we are as Black women. And as I did my work on Madam Walker, the things that fascinated me most about her was discovering her role as a political activist and her role as a philanthropist. So I had to uncover all of that and then present it to create a fuller picture of her. I'm finding the same thing is happening as I'm writing about Alunia Walker. She has been kind of caricatured. Yeah. You know, even scholars whose work I admire and revere, they have kind of put her in a little box where she had parties and spent her mother's money. So, you know, she did have parties and she did spend some of her mother's money, but nobody's that two-dimensional. So, you know, so what I've discovered is that she really was a key patron of the arts. For instance, Augusta Savage, the great sculptor, her first major exhibition was in Alunia Walker's townhouse on 136th Street. Wow. She always hired the Black musicians to perform at her parties. She hired Black seamstresses, Black hat makers, Mildred Blount, who did the hats for Gone with the Wind, and did the hats for my grandmother's wedding. And there, I have a letter where she says this was her first commission. So there are many ways that Alunia Walker was contributing to the arts that really have gone unnoticed and that have been buried, and we're bringing them back.
She attended Knoxville College, which is an HBCU. It is an HBCU. Did she have another connection to the HBCU community?
Yes, she did. She attended Knoxville College. But, you know, one thing that she did that is related to Black schools is that when the Panhellenic, the first Panhellenic conference happened, she invited people to come to Indianapolis to the Madam Walker building in Indianapolis.
Okay.
She knew they were coming. Whenever the Black fraternities and sororities were in New York during the Christmas holidays for parties, they often had those parties at her house, at her townhouse on 136th Street. So she was very aware of that. And her third husband was at Tuskegee working at the Veterans Hospital, so she spent a lot of time on Tuskegee's campus as well.
Her third husband.
That's
another story. So she hosted a Greek letter organization. Was she a member of one?
No, because she didn't graduate from college. She really was only at Knoxville for really less than a year. But she at least had that connection with Knoxville.
And so what other connections did she have with the civil rights community?
One of her very best friends was Lucille Green Randolph, Aethelp Randolph's wife. And the building where Aethelp Randolph staged the planning for the March on Washington had been something that Alunia Walker had to raise money for in 1921. You know, little known facts. I'm digging up all of these, you know, amazing facts. So she hosted the NAACP's meetings often at Villa LaWarra at the house in Irvington. She was very good friends with Aethelp Randolph and with others who were involved in the civil rights movement. Her mother was sort of more directly involved with friendships with Ida B. Wells and Du Bois and James Weldon Johnson, but Alunia Walker continued through the Walker Company to contribute to civil rights causes.
Now, what's the truth of the matter that she spent up all the money? Obviously, it's her money. She could spend it if she wanted to, but the word on the street, if you will, and the way that people portray her is that she ran through the money and basically ruined the Walker Company.
Right. Yeah, you know, and that is, I mean, it's sort of an easy meme. You know, one generation makes the money, the next generation spends the money. That is true in a lot of situations. And Elaine Walker did spend rather extravagantly. There's no question. I am not denying that in any way. But it is more complicated than that. So in 1927, the company built a new factory in Indianapolis. And thank goodness they built it, but that was a big drain on the resources. The house in Irvington that Madam Walker had built in 1918 was very expensive to keep up, the taxes, the upkeep, and all of those things. So that was a drain. And then the depression hit. So the market crash and the Walker Company sales really diminished by almost a third of what they had been right before the depression. So all of those things coming together meant that by the time Amelia Walker died in 1931, the company was really struggling. But thanks to F.D. Ransom, the Madam Walker's attorney, and they called him general manager, but he'd really be sort of CFO, CIO, VP, all of those things, the company kept going and sort of managed to survive and actually never went out of business. But Amelia Walker is not the reason that the company was struggling. It was a combination of these investments as well as the market crashing and Black people not having money to spend on products.
So fast forward, when did the company actually go out of business?
So the company actually never went out of business, but it's a little complicated. My family and the Ransom family, and many people will know Stanley Nelson and Jill Nelson, who are fantastic as filmmakers and writers, their grandfather continued to be involved in the company, as did my family. And in the 1980s, the board of trustees involving those two families sold the rights to the trademark to Madam Walker Hair Care Products to another entity, which owned it for about 30 years, but really did not do a lot with it. The company was sort of dormant. In comes Richelieu Dennis about 6 years ago, CEO, founder of Sundial Brands, and bought the trademark and has revived the product. So you can say that the company has been in business since 1906. It had some decades when not much was happening, but it never actually went out of business. So tell me about Richelieu Dennis. He has has a relationship with Loire,
right,
which was the great estate that Madam Walker built. He bought Essence Magazine, and he's also purchased the rights to the Walker products. Who is this Black man, and what is his connection to Black women in such a supportive way? Rich is really an amazing guy. He's a visionary. He's a good person. We first met about 5 years ago after he had purchased the trademark, and he has made me the brand historian because he really respects that I know the history. But he and his wonderful entity, his sister, his family, and other research people are really great at developing products. But we had lunch in Washington, and I just immediately liked him. We immediately clicked, and I could see that he was good people. And then he wanted to revive Madam Walker. He grew up in Liberia, and he heard about Madam Walker even there. He came to the United States to go to college. He went to Babson College, graduated in 91. His mother came from Liberia, but because of the war, they never were able to go back. And as he survived, they began to use his grandmother's recipe for shea butter. They were on 125th Street and 5th Avenue 27 years ago when almost nobody knew what shea butter was, and now it's in everything you buy. He built this amazing company, Sundial Brands, and sold it to Unilever, but he's still the CEO. They went over as an intact company, and he used some of the proceeds from that sale to buy Essence, to create this $100 million New Voices Fund to help women of color entrepreneurs, and the foundation, New Voices Foundation, now owns Bill Loire.
So Bill Loire is legendary. Mostly for the party.
There's nothing wrong with party.
Exactly.
It was great to party. Because Amelia Walker was an impresario. Great to have a great party.
We got to find joy. I mean, especially at times like this. So, little party. Never hurt anybody. But welcome to the...
We're going to stop right there. I thought it was important for us to hear something about a female. Madam Walker was a great entrepreneur of scalp and hair products, millionaire, did much for Black people prior to the Depression. All the way on back to the turn of the century, there's much history about her. So we talked about, with Blair Underwood, about the black Christ. And I thought it would be important for us to talk about a black woman. So today, here we are on a Saturday waiting for our Savior to reappear on a Sunday, which is tomorrow, where he rose up from the dead. We have had an opportunity to listen to two of our world. Historically, black people who had, especially Madam Walker, and also Blair Underwood in his presentation on the Donahue show of Black Christ. So for those of us who are going to be celebrating Easter tomorrow, have a fantastic Easter. And for those of us who have gone on and will be going on because of the sickness, let's pray for all of those people who are sick that they will be well. This has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter D.